You're listening to Admitting Diagnosis, the Journal Watch podcast for the week ending November 21st. I'm Joe Elia. You know the drill by now. We offer a brief summary of the news, an interview, and sometimes a smile. And we do all this to keep your brain occupied while mowing your lawn or shoveling your driveway. And for your part, if you want me to know you're out there listening, give me a call and leave some reactions to all this at 617-440-4374. Here we go. First, the top three headlines. Statins cut risks from cardiovascular events in patients with normal cholesterol but high CRP. Guidelines offered on second-generation antidepressants. And ginkgo doesn't prevent dementia. Now some details. First, the statins story. The New England Journal of Medicine carried a report from the Jupiter trial in which 18,000 patients without high cholesterol but with high C-reactive protein levels, that is, 2 milligrams or higher, were randomized to rosuvastatin or placebo. The study was stopped after about 2 years when those on statins showed a drop in major cardiovascular events relative to those on placebo. Writing in Journal Watch Cardiology, Joel Gore says the results regarding the value of high-sensitivity CRP testing are inconclusive, and that there are no obvious changes needed in guidelines on CRP testing. Next, the second-generation antidepressant guidelines. They aren't really surprising, but they're good to keep in mind. First, the second-generation drugs are all about equally effective, so choose among them on the basis of their side effects, profiles, and patient preferences. Second, assess the patient's status regularly, starting within 2 weeks of prescribing. Third, change the treatment if there's no response within 2 months. And finally, bear in mind that first episode treatments should continue for about 6 months, and those with recurrent depression, even if they respond to treatment, should remain on the regimen for much longer, perhaps years or permanently. And our last story is actually the subject of our interview, and here we go. Here is our interview. Earlier this week, JAMA published the results of a long-term trial of ginkgo extract for preventing dementia. The results weren't encouraging for ginkgo fans. The trial was conducted in 5 academic medical centers and encompassed some 3,000 subjects initially free of dementia. They were randomized to twice-daily ginkgo extract or twice-daily placebo and followed for roughly 6 years. By the end of that 6-year follow-up, the incidence rate of dementia was roughly equivalent between both the placebo and the treatment groups. We've asked Dr. Stephen Dukoski, the dean of the University of Virginia School of Medicine and the first author on the paper, to talk about it with us. Dean Dukoski, thank you for taking the time with us this evening.
My pleasure.
Ginkgo extract is, according to one estimate, a $100 million a year industry in the U.S. alone. Are there that many people taking the stuff?
It's hard to know exactly how many people take it. Those are the approximate dollars exchanged. It is in some mixtures as well as being in pills which specifically only have ginkgo. But a lot of people do take it probably regularly and some less regularly for various indications or various things that they believe it helps.
And it's not only then dementia, but it's things like heart health and other things, right?
Yes. Usually for these sorts of supplements or complementary medications, because of the limitations on what kinds of things can be claimed, they are usually associated with things like to preserve heart health or brain health or vascular health. It does have some multiple kinds of applications for everything from arthritis to cardiac health to vascular disease to tinnitus, for which there does appear to be some evidence that may be helpful.
In the course of this research, were you surprised by any of the findings?
I think it's better to characterize my reaction as disappointed rather than surprised.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that there was a biological rationale. There are powerful antioxidants in the extracts of ginkgo that are sold over the counter. We found out actually after the study had begun that there were some potential basic science findings of actions against the proteins that are altered in Alzheimer's disease that might have proven helpful. But we know that the literature is filled with studies where it looked as if the biological rationale for the pill was strong, but when it was put into humans, it didn't work. And so we by no means knew what the outcome of this study would be. Powerful antioxidants, you might predict, could slow down the progression of disease, maybe even a better rationale for that than that they would acutely make your memory better. And that's what we were looking for. Could we slow down the progression or the entry of people into dementia if they faithfully took the medication for a long period of time and started when they were cognitively normal? And we didn't find evidence that it had any effect at all on the course of disease.
There was a subgroup of patients who had a history of cardiovascular disease at baseline, at study entry. And ginkgo extract seemed to have had an adverse effect there. Is that right?
Well, there are all sorts of sub-analyses that you can do. Everyone loves to pick apart data sets after they're done. This is called data mining or data exploration. In this particular case, there was this one group that had this happen. On the other hand, there were other places, for example, where there were very different effects. In a very small group of patients, it looked like there was less vascular dementia that emerged in the people who took the drug versus those who didn't. Again, very small numbers. And yet the number of people who had vascular disease plus Alzheimer's wasn't decreased at all in the group that took ginkgo. So in the editorial that accompanied the article, the caution was made by Lon Schneider that when you take these small subgroups out of a larger study, and the study was powered for a specific answer using the large number of people, you have to be very cautious about whether you draw any conclusions that you would act on from a smaller group. It would be a bit counterintuitive to have vascular problems emerge from something which had been for so long regarded as something that was positive for vascular disease, and we don't have a mechanism by which that would happen. Most importantly, it wasn't powered to show us those sorts of changes.
I see. And so if according to your analysis of the primary outcomes, I think there were the two were dementia and or Alzheimer's disease. Is that right?
Right. All-cause dementia, meaning all people who descended to meet a diagnostic criteria of the diagnostic criteria of dementia. And then we had a panel of experts who would look at all of the data from all the patients, including their imaging, and give them a specific diagnosis, research diagnosis for the study, whether it was Alzheimer's disease or Lewy body disease, vascular dementia. And it turns out, as we expected, that about 85% of all of the cases in this group were Alzheimer's. So we had lots of power to look at Alzheimer's disease as well as all-cause dementia.
And so when you looked at just at those outcomes, there was no effect from ginkgo extract.
No, there was nothing there. In fact, and people have made another point of this as well, looking maybe too hard at the data, there were actually more people who were on ginkgo who developed dementia than there were people on placebo who developed dementia. So the numbers were in favor of ginkgo having more of a risk, but it wasn't significant at all, and basically it amounts to no effect.
Okay. Are there resources that clinicians can point their patients to for more information about treatments like this?
Yes. Probably the best place to go is to the website for the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medications. They were the major sponsor of this trial at the NIH. Their mission is to look at these sorts of complementary medicines, alternative medications, put them into trials that are the scientific standards that we use for the FDA to approve a drug for a prescription and determine whether or not they're effective. So they've looked at Echinacea and St. John's Wort. They do a variety of other kinds of studies, and they were the major sponsors of the ginkgo trial. On their website, you can find a lot of information about complementary and alternative medications, what's believed about them, frequently what the side effects are, or what sorts of studies have been done to see whether or not they can do what it's claimed that they can do.
I'll put that. I'll put the URL for that website and the accompanying material with the interview here, so
terrific.
People can find.
And one of the issues is for many of the places who sell these medications, what you'll see on their websites will, of course, be things that are able to put their compounds in the most positive or favorable light. The objective aspects of this, that someone who doesn't have a conflict of interest and simply wants to know objectively, is there an effect of the compound or not, has to be someone who isn't associated with selling, and that is that's NCAM's position.
The editorialist on your paper said that that you had collected really the largest and conducted the longest running and had amassed the largest amount of data on this question that had not been sponsored by a company. Is that right?
Yes. In fact, there weren't any studies this large that had been sponsored by a company.
Uh-huh.
We have prevention trials take longer and take more people than do treatment trials to see whether over the course of 12 weeks or 24 weeks you could see an acute difference in people at the end of the trial. This is usually for people who are symptomatic, and you say at the end of the trial, are their symptoms less marked than they were at the beginning? So this is actually the first trial ever to recruit a new cohort of people to be in it and actually finish. Others that have tried have generally had to stop because of side effects of whatever the preparation was, and didn't get an answer.
And just to emphasize, you followed them for a median of about 6 years, didn't you?
Yes, 6 years, I believe, was the numerical average, a little over 6 years.
Oh,
we started recruiting for this study in the fall of 2000. We completed recruitment of the 3,000 people in the spring of 2002, and we were waiting for the number of cases to convert to dementia that we knew would allow us to do the statistical tests. And that ended up occurring in the spring of 2008. So people who might have come in and stayed with us all the way from the fall of 2000 up until 2008 could have spent as much as 7.5 years in the study. And so we had some people out that far, but overall the average was about 6 years, clearly enough to let us know whether we were having a signal or not.
How might physicians talk to their patients about things like, well, specifically about ginkgo extract, given the results that you have? Are they safe in saying that it has no effect, and if it makes you feel better, go ahead and take it? But
I think that's a reasonable assumption for people who are in the older age group, which was the group that we studied. So if you come in to see, or if someone comes in to see you, and they're 72, 73 years old, and they're saying, you know, like many people, one of the things that I really fear is that I will develop Alzheimer's disease. Should I take ginkgo to help ward it off? I think the answer now is no. There isn't any evidence that taking this for a number of years will decrease your risk of the disease. It's not being able to answer that question the other way that we found so disappointing. My own rule for my patients, when they ask me about complementary and alternative medicines, especially if they have one they want to take, is three things. First, it can't interfere with the medications that they are already taking, that they have to take either for Alzheimer's or for other disorders. Second, because it isn't proven, it can't be too expensive, that it would break the family, but they somehow feel they have to do something for their family member. And third, it can't have too much in the way of side effects or toxicity, because given the fact that we don't know, and in fact don't think it is likely to be effective, it certainly isn't proven to be effective, my tolerance for toxicity is low, and my tolerance for patients spending a lot of money taking it is very low.
Well, that's good advice, Dr. Dukoski. I want to thank you again for talking with us this evening.
Oh, you're welcome.
And finally this week, we've got a big holiday coming up, Thanksgiving, and so we won't have a podcast next week, not even a reprise. We'll be back the first week of December. Have a lovely holiday and a safe one, too. If you'd like to leave a comment, call 617-440-4374. I'd love to have your thoughts. Links for all stories are available at podcasts.jwatch.org, where you will also find a collection of previous editions. The executive producer for Admitting Diagnosis is Adore Yano. Join us in 2 weeks, won't you? Thank you for listening. For the Journal Watch podcast, I'm Joe Elia.